to rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep. He can't hang around.
Io's house
in the middle of our street.
Io's house.
Isle's house. We're here. We're back. New York Islanders are pretty hot. Before we get into everything, we got to take care of the housekeeping. First things first, follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ethan GSN. Rocco's at Pizza Sports Guy. Jack at Isle's Den. Follow the pod page at Isle's House. Subscribe wherever you get your favorite podcasts. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Wherever you get your favorite podcasts, we are there. Hit the subscribe button, then unsubscribe, then resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a good comment. Help us get up those rankings. Of course, subscribe to the YouTube page. Been doing some good numbers, good comments the last couple episodes. We really want to get that up there. We appreciate everyone that's been watching on that platform. The QR code, I'm going to see if I can get this right. Nope, got it wrong. QR code that's right there above Rocco. If you want to support us and you're not subscribed to our Patreon, check out the store. We got hats, we got sweatshirts, we got a bunch of other fun merch, so check that out. Of course, subscribe to the Patreon. That banner is not running right now. There it is. Patreon.com/Isle's House if you want extra episodes to your phone and your computer pretty frequently, I would say. We actually just finished up recording a fun episode with Elio from Barstool, Mr. Ice himself. Hit that subscribe button, all different tiers. Join the Discord. We got some pretty interesting insider information in there for the insider tier. And last but not least, we are brought to you by the Rust and Gold in Huntington. Great food, great drinks. Recently redone interior, great spot to go and catch a game. If you are a Patreon subscriber, you do have a discount that's waiting for you in our Discord. Gentlemen, it's quite a lengthy intro. It's getting longer and longer every single time. I got to, you know, figure this out and cut it short. But we are coming to you Monday night, going into, you're probably listening to this on Tuesday. The Islanders have been pretty hot, and we go to Jackie Recaps for a quick recap.
So I believe the last time we recorded was right after that overtime win in New Jersey. That was followed up by a historic stretch of overtime wins in Islanders history. They won 3 in a row for the first time. The game in Vegas and Utah, I felt like that game really, both games could have went either way. The one in Utah, you could argue they should have lost that one easily, but Vegas will start there. First period, their teams are kind of trading chances, but the Islanders get a power play after Heinemann scored. Then Matthew Schaefer scores. It's 2-0 after one. I'm sitting there in Vegas. I'm feeling fantastic. The second period is kind of a little bit boring, like kind of surprisingly, but Vegas scored. Shea Theodore took us out of our boredom with some ridiculous goal. Thought he threw Sorokin's pad into the net a little bit, but suddenly, Vegas scores twice in the beginning of the third, and it's 3-2. Then Patrick Waugh challenges one. He kind of throws the Hail Mary, and then I had to listen to the Vegas goal horn for a fourth time, and man, it felt like Madison Square Garden listening to that goal horn, guys. It was not fun for the fourth time in like 20 minutes. So I'm sitting next to a Vancouver fan. He's like, "You've gotten so quiet since Vegas made it 3-2. He's like, "What happened to all your energy?" I'm like, I know how this ends. Like, there's just no way. We got the goalie pulled with 4 minutes to go. This shit never works. Neither do Barzal slap shots, I feel like. But miraculously, found the back of the net with, I want to say, 2 minutes to go. And I was just like, it's always a weird feeling when you're at a game or watching a game and, like, you're up 2-0, and then you're just so happy to get a point. But the game goes to overtime, and you know, it's your typical overtime. I mean, Sorokin made some ridiculous saves. And then the Islanders take the penalty, turn to the guy again. I'm like, all right, like, it was fun, but like, I know it's over now. Like, it's 2 minutes of 2 minutes of power play time in OT, and then a shootout. Like, we were completely cooked. And JG Pageau, you just watch him slowly get up there, rips a game winner past Schmid. And the Islanders go to Utah the next night, and this is just going to be fast. They were thoroughly dominated. Romanov shots are like 16-0 while he's on the ice. We'll get to him, but yeah, they just hang in there. Like, there were, I want to say, 5 power plays in a row for Utah. And after that 5th one, and you're looking up and it's 2-1, you're thinking like, they're going to do, after watching what I watched 24 hours ago, they're going to do this. And it took Drouin playing some soccer to find the equalizer. And with my flight in an hour, I couldn't leave the game. And luckily,
we'll talk
I didn't.
About that. I mean, that
Schaefer.
What, no. For what were you thinking?
I'm so proud of my thought process because you go to Utah and you tell me how you like it, sir. Utah, man. Like, I don't want to be disrespectful, but outside of a cool drink, there was really not much there for me.
Players love it, Jack. The players love it over there. Maybe you didn't go to the right spots.
Maybe I didn't. It's so quiet. I mean, it's like. It's so quiet. It's a clean city. It could be for some people,
I guess.
Opposite
of LA on both of those, so I see why you don't like it.
That's true. Opposite of LA, but going from Vegas to Utah, man, it's a steep drop of like excitement and energy. But luckily, Schaefer scored the game winner, became the youngest player in NHL history to score an overtime goal. So kind of a historic week there. And then it ends with facing Brock Nelson and the Avs last night. Thought the Islanders actually played a really good game. I was encouraged by it. Just I felt they were toe to toe. Had the goalie pulled at the end, just couldn't get the magic. But what a great week,
Jack. Great week, no doubting that. But you feel a little bad you didn't go to Colorado. You were 2-0, and then you skipped the Colorado game and the
show. I do agree with you, Rocco. It was honestly a bit selfish, and it should have been done.
Yeah, I mean, get it. It's hard to go to all of them, but. When you win the two in such a magical way and then going to Colorado and the magic's gone because Jack's gone.
I would be lying if the thought of me being at the airport missing my flight, I wasn't going to like, just take a peek at what the flights for Denver were looking like for the next day. But yeah, I'd like to.
That was the secret plan the whole time?
It was in the back of my head. I can't lie, but you know.
You just take an extra day off work, you know.
Take an extra day off work. Be a terrible boyfriend. The list goes on of things that I could have that could have negatively impacted me, but it would have been worth it if we won the game. And yeah, maybe I'll listen, have to.
It's a bargain, Jack. You know, Eleanor, you won't let me put the Josh Bailey jersey on the wall. The least you can do is let me go to Colorado.
That's true. That's true. But yeah, I'll be back on Long Island next week for Thanksgiving. I hope that I can continue my undefeated streak, which is like, I feel like I'm one of those fans that goes to the game and always sees losses. So for that to be the outcome
it happens to most of us, Jack.
Yeah.
But for that you weren't catching too many wins.
Yeah, but no. For that to be the outcome, like pounding the table for this team before the season started, saying that they could finish third of the Metro, just like drinking all the Kool-Aid I can right now, because after watching what I saw, like they find ways to win when you really don't expect it. And it's just been a really fun season for me so far.
It's been a fun season for all of us, including the two schlubs here who have them finishing fifth and sixth in the Metro.
Well, long way to go. It's so tight. That's the craziest
part. I know.
I was looking at the standings today. I'm like, outside of, I mean, Buffalo won today, so maybe not even. Like, everyone in the East is sort of alive. There's a couple
within 6 points of each other or something like that.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I think Buffalo won tonight. They're probably 4 to 6 points out of a playoff spot. That's how tight it is in the East. So a hot streak and a cold streak could make or break you right now. And I think that gets us into the next topic, right?
Well, we may be looking back at that 0-3 start, but yeah, that does bring us into the next topic. Are the Islanders good or are they just streaky?
Jack.
So this, my opinion on this team, it may actually upset some. I don't think that they've played particularly great. I think that they just have enough talent that they are able to find ways to score goals in really important situations. Like, you actually, the 6-on-5 situation for this team, it didn't score last night, but like when you have Schaefer walking the line and then you suddenly look around, you have Horvat who has 12 goals already. You have Barzal and Drouin on the perimeter. And you have Lee in front of the net, a guy who's been doing this for a decade. Like, there's actual talent that's able to overcome some of the weakness, and they've started to get goaltending. Sorokin and Riddick, by the way, masterclass games I witnessed for both of them. So I don't think they've played their best hockey yet. And I think as Wah figures out the pieces that click together and they're winning when they're not exactly clicking is a really, really good sign. You know, Ovechkin with the Capitals last year, I know it's a really weird comparison to make, but I think that their team is good, but I think the greatness of it from last season of almost winning the President's Trophy, it kind of comes from this momentum of being a story the entire season. And I think the Islanders might have caught that vibe a little bit just with Schaefer. Like, they're being, every game is being followed, and this is a really special season to be a fan because you don't expect them to be good. And it has just been like, when this is going to be the one of the only times in Schaefer's career where there's no team-wide expectation. So everything is just a bonus. And it kind of feels like the Capitals winning last season on top of the record is just a bonus. That's how I feel like with our historic defenseman right now.
Yeah. That's a great point.
That was a very good point. And honestly,
that's going to be a TikTok clip. I have it written down in my notes here.
Awesome.
Yeah. Very good, Jack. But yeah, every time I think about it, that 3.5%, I mean, if we don't have Schaefer, where are we? Because I like,
oh God,
like we're vying for the number one pick if we don't have Schaefer, I think.
Yeah, like, we're like Buffalo status.
Like, you look at our defense without him, it's bad. Like, really, really bad. So, yeah, the forward group is deep. Sorokin didn't come out the gates hot. Now he's looking good. Rittich is looking nice. They're doing their jobs in the crease. But, yeah, I mean, just good stuff. As far as whether they're good or streaky, I guess time will tell. But they're certainly streaky. It's just that the good streaks can outweigh the bad streaks. Like, the key is right now, you just lost to Colorado, right? Don't let it snowball. And who do they play next, Jack?
Dallas.
Dallas.
Yeah. You got Dallas and then Detroit, both away, correct?
Yep.
Yep.
Don't split. You can't lose both of those games. Like, if you drop one, not that you ever want to accept a loss, but it's more okay because you beat some good teams prior. But you can't lose both of those games. You can't let it snowball into a losing streak, and that's the key. When you come off a winning streak, don't immediately turn around and drop 4 out of 5 or 3 out of 4. Like, you got to come back strong and play, and that's going to be the difference of whether or not this team can make the playoffs. Coming off those winning streaks, can you stop the bleeding after you lose a game? Because we saw that in years past too. Like, even you guys remember, even the years they went on their Eastern Conference Finals runs, there were cold spells where if COVID doesn't happen, you're worried they don't even make it. So we've absolutely seen it before where these cold streaks can come back to kill you, but that's the key, man. It's so tight, you just can't afford a cold streak.
They're also pretty lucky with injury luck so far. Like, they need to stay healthy. Like, huge. Massive. That's massive.
And I'm not going to name names, but there's a couple guys on this roster. Like, if they go down, we're cooked. There's like 3 or 4 guys that if this guy goes down, we're fucked. So,
I want to touch on that. Like, who do you guys think are some guys that, like, we are completely chalked? Like, I think one guy that doesn't get mentioned enough, like, if Pelech went down, done.
Yeah. Heinemann goes down, fucked.
Yeah, that's true too.
No, on the real though, Schaefer, obviously.
Sorokin.
As good as Rittich has been the last couple games, if Sorokin goes down, they're done.
Done.
Because then it's Rittich and Duck, Hogberg. Yeah. Horvat, Barzal are huge.
It's Horvat, Barzal, Schaefer.
Yeah, and Sorokin. Those are the four I was.
And Pelech.
Pelech's a good next tier for sure.
Just in terms of streak, you're good. Jack, you bring up a really good point, especially about the health. But I feel like with what we've been seeing production-wise from some of the top guys we just mentioned, which I'll knock on wood here, hopefully do not go down with an injury, they really haven't gotten a ton of secondary scoring from like a bunch of guys who we discussed in the preseason podcast. Kyle Palmieri, I think, I don't know if we spoke about this on the pod, but Rocco and I have at least discussed it privately. I feel like his numbers are very inflated just due to the fact that the Islanders were scoring a million goals for like their first 10 games. And he's missed a number of grade A opportunities. He's currently on pace, as the calculator says, for 21.6 goals this year. But again, like another guy who, him playing back-to-back 82 game seasons the last 2 years is almost unheard of for him. And he's 34. Anders Lee, 34, 35 right now, 35.
If he's not 35, he's going to be 35 during the season.
I mean, he's only got 3 goals this year. I mean, he's flying under our season total prediction as it stands right now. Simon Holmstrom, I'm the biggest Holmstrom guy in the world. I've been incredibly underwhelmed. And I think like as time goes on, I hope, because I think some of what the top six is doing is unsustainable, like on the real, now that we're not trolling the Canadiens fans. Like,
yes,
Emil Heinemann has an absurd shooting percentage. Like Bo Horvat is
an absurd shot, just to put that
in. Of course he does. Dog, he does. Man. He's a dog. He's an absolute dog. I love him. But like, okay, yeah, if he cracks 30 goals, I'm still thrilled.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Same thing with Bo Horvat. If he cracks 40, I'm thrilled, even though he's on pace for, I don't know what it is now, but previous episode 61 and a half. I'm happy to do the math. Actually, so now I got my handy dandy calculator.
I don't think he's scored since then.
No, 12 and 19. He's on pace for 51 point. If you round up, 51.8. So, shout out to the calculator. Shout out to the real mathematicians out there. But it's, again, it's like you're really not getting any sort of offensive production from the back end outside of Matthew Schaefer. And then there's just been a good amount of guys who have flown under the radar for lack of production, simply because Barzal and Horvat and Heinemann have been playing unconscious hockey.
Just to cut you off quick, how many does Duke have?
Oh yeah, Duke.
He's one of those guys.
Like, I thought,
three goals in 19 games, 6 points in 19 games.
And he hasn't been particularly bad. It's just like
His role on this team.
You got to put him in the cup.
We were just talking about Holmstrom in a different light when he was playing with Pageau too. Like the new line combinations probably need a switch up. Like Holmstrom looked good with Pageau. Like now, it just the fit's not there with Barzal.
Him and Barzal have never worked together. I don't know why we're going back and doing this again. It's just what Barzal is a perimeter player, and Holmstrom is not the crash the net type of goal go getter. Right? It's not a good fit. It's really not.
But you know what? With Simon, and I'll say this about Emil too. Like those two, when Simon's at his best and when Emil's at his best, they don't need to necessarily put up points to be effective. There are some other guys like Duclair. I'm sorry, but if he's not putting points, what is he really doing? Anders Lee, he's been better all around, but another one, like if he's not jamming in goals in the crease, like what is he doing that's so effective? Because he's not getting in too quickly on the forecheck. To me, Palmieri, same thing. As you said, inflated numbers a little bit, but he needs to score. Like Palmieri does a lot of little things well, but as he gets older, it's the Cizikas effect. You're not in on the forecheck as quickly. You can't do the little things as much. So, unfortunately, you do have to kind of put up points to be a factor in this lineup. And a lot of them just aren't doing it. So,
yeah. It pains me a little bit to admit, like with Palmieri, his point totals, they're there. Like, if they wanted to trade him, they'll get a good return. But I completely agree with you guys. Like, it is a little empty calorie, and he's starting to just look a little bit slow. He can't get to his spots. He can't get his shot off. I just feel like there were a couple opportunities last night in particular. Palmieri at his best, he's burying those. So that's something to watch, but it's also not the worst problem. We're talking about guys like Palmieri and Lee. Like they're not even like they're going to be replaced by Shabanov, by Iserman. Like it's just, I don't really look at them as a problem. Holmstrom, I just hope he gets back on that third line with the director of player development.
Well, Holmstrom, it's an audition to be a part of that group, right?
Yeah.
If you say, okay, Palmieri, maybe even Lee, maybe even Pageau, they might not be here because of contract situations, age, whatnot. Someone like Holmstrom, you got to earn it still, right? Like he's had decent seasons, but you want to prove to the team like, no, when you begin this full-on retool and we're building around Schaefer and it's 23, 24, 25-year-olds you're acquiring, I'm going to be a part of that package because I'm going to prove myself. Like Heinemann, to me, say what you want about the shooting percentage, but just his overall game, to me, he's a part of that package already. Like, as Jack said, he's a dog. He hits. He does everything. He skates well. He's big. There's not really a flaw in his game.
All right, let's move on to our second favorite new toy. Emil Heinemann. Rocco, your thoughts?
You simply don't trade a player like Emil Heinemann. It's as simple as that. The guy's 6'2". He skates like the wind, plays the game the right way, and he just puts in goals nonstop. I mean, when we acquired this man, we thought, you know, maybe fourth line, be the new Clutterbuck for us, be a fun guy, a fan favorite. He's more than that. You could hit me with whatever you want. Shooting percentage, this, that. The guy plays the game and he plays it well. He's a dog. Already love him. And the fact that you're a fit on that first line tells you something, right? Because you can't just put anyone on that first line and they produce. Like, no disrespect to him, but if you put Simon Holmes from there right now, he's not producing in this manner. If you put Anthony Duclair right now, he's not producing like this. So Heinemann is an excellent player. I couldn't be more excited. 23 years old, and we have him next year at 1.1.
24. He just turned 24.
24, but fact of the matter is, next year as well at 1.1. Probably going to cash in after that, but steal.
Happy to. Well, I feel like we'll love.
38.8 goals.
Yeah, we're going to love to see that. When? How many? 38.8?
38.8.
Unbelievable.
30 would be a huge W.
Yeah. 100%. Like, he just does all of the little things too. Like, last night after he scored a goal, I just noticed that he won like three or four battles to create other opportunities for Horvat. He breaks up plays defensively. He's physical. Like, I'm really just impressed with Darsh's eye for this talent to be able to identify it sitting on Montreal's fourth line and was like, no, I'm going to need that guy, specifically that guy. And they were probably like, all right, whatever. We'll just take.
Am I crazy? Back. Like, stylistically, he feels like winger Horvat.
A little bit, because he plays so tenaciously, but he's just a little bit more physical, and it just isn't as skilled. But there are a lot of parallels.
That's why they play well together. Put those two horses in a playmaker, you're good to go.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Shout out to Montreal, who just threw him in the trash because they're trash people. And shout out to Matthew Darsh and the Islanders for going dumpster diving and finding an absolute gem of a player. So we thank you, Noah Dobson. We thank you, Matthew Darsh. And we thank you, Montreal, because this is looking like a guy that will be a staple on this team. Very excited to see what the 7-year deal looks like when that time is coming, because he's going to be here for a long time.
Yes, he will.
Okay, next topic. How much credit goes to Juan, his staff, for this start?
I'm gonna give them a good amount of credit, to be honest, because, I mean, the three of us too, right? 0-3 to start.
By the way, not to like backtrack onto Emil Heinemann, by the way, but easily the funniest nickname for Emil Heinemann was posted in our Discord the other day. And I don't know if another content creator came up with it or if another fan, but if you are the originator of this, please let me know so I can give you proper credit. But to call Emil Heinemann, who we have lovingly dubbed the ass man, calling him the proctologist is unbelievable work. So I will be referring to him as the proctologist from here on out. Anyway, Patrick Waugh, the coaching staff.
Yeah, no, credit to them, because we started 0-3 and we were kind of wondering, is he going to be on the hot seat? Is he going to last this year? Things are getting ugly. But it's not just about the wins and the structure. It's the vibes around the team right now, and they seem to be really good. I mean, you had the national media making a huge deal of that. Which game did we score that tying goal late in the game? Or no, the go-ahead goal. I think it was Holmstrom's goal. And you just see the bench going nuts, jumping on each other. Like, the team's very together, so you always got to give the coach credit for that. And although the numbers aren't really there, I think you guys would both agree with me. Like, the power play at least looks competent now. Like, they have chances. They're not finishing, but I think the structure is pretty good.
Obviously, it's half there. It's half there. The
first year, that's the big thing. Schaefer alone is.
It's Schaefer, Barzal. Like, the structure is there. Like, they can. Right. It's so refreshing watching them, the zone entries and through the neutral zone, the double drops.
You have another option. It used to be that you could literally see it come. The three of us watch all the games. You literally knew it was coming. One guy comes up, drop, slingshot, Barzal brings it up. And then once Barzal enters, it's like, all right, I got to hold another 5-10 seconds, and then we try to set up shop, and it doesn't work out. But now you have the two of them. It's fun to watch. It's, you know, it's better than it was last year. So it's improved, and you got to give Wah credit on that. I think those factors have been improving. So I give Wah some credit, and I think he has a good bit to do with this team's success right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like the number one Wah guy on the podcast, I think.
For sure.
Definitely.
the past couple, past year, really just hammering home the point that this, not that he was sort of made to captain a rudderless ship, but he pretty much was. Like, this is a guy who wanted to come in here and play a high tempo game of hockey. He wanted the defense to join the rush. And yes, a big part of that is Matthew Schaefer's presence here now. You know, adding D'Angelo last year certainly helped that style of play. Darsh did a very good job of adding more speed and skill to the forward group. It's probably the deepest forward group we've had in years. Drouin, Shabanov's healthy, Heinemann, just really fast players up and down the lineup. And it's funny, Rocco, because it does feel like the same group of people who like to criticize us for being bearish on the Islanders entering the season. We're also some of Waugh's biggest haters, and yet they don't want to eat the crow that they probably should. But Patrick Waugh absolutely deserves credit for the job that he's done. I think he did a great job on his assistant hiring. You know, Benoit, Bennett, Boehner, I think it's pronounced. Just a really good Buffner. Staff. Buffner, sure. I'm not a names guy. Very competent staff all around. And Rocco brings up a good point about the power play. Like, even though it is not highly ranked, like they solved their biggest problem with it, which was just zone entries and getting set up. And I can't really remember a time before this year where the power play just looked easy. Like, when that first unit's out there, you know, on most circumstances, they're getting set up. Now, the finishing could use some work. I do think that it's a bit one-dimensional because it's basically Schaefer getting shots through from the point or getting the puck to Horvat in the bumper. But fine. Like, we'll work on that. Hopefully we can, you know, add Cole Eiserman to the mix and actually have a threat to score from the side.
Shooters.
Yeah. But they deserve so much credit. You know, hopefully Ilya Sorokin keeps this up. They deserve credit for helping to fix him. You know, Pelech is having a bit of a resurgence now that he's healthy. Schaefer obviously helps. The forward group is super deep, but they finally have the players to fit the system they want to play, and the results are there to show for it.
Yeah, I like what I've seen from him in general. Like, I think that Sorokin improving the way he handled all of the situations internally with players not playing well, I like how he went about it. But I liked the last night. He finally, like, kind of cut the cord with Cizikas and benched him in the third period. He's just, like, he's starting to – I feel like he's making the right decisions now, and I'm starting to believe there's a chance that he could be scratched, which is, like, definitely a start. As long as Cizikas is playing, it sucks to say it, but, like, the fourth line is really just going to be non-existent, and he's starting to realize that, so that's important. What's he going to do, like, defenseman-wise? Like, that game where Romanov was on the ice for 16 shots against and 0-4, there's not much he can do because you have to equal out playing time defensively. I think for what he has, he's actually maximized it more this season than he has any other year. So I give him credit so far, 100%.
Yeah, and Ethan, who's the you know the name. Shout out the mental health coach we got going.
Oh, yeah. Siana Sylvester. Sylvesna.
Yeah, Sylvesna. She seems to have really helped Sorokin, so that's huge.
100%. All right, what's the next topic we got here?
If anyone has final thoughts, and then we can get into our Q&A.
No, I think we can get into the Q&A.
You good, Jack?
First question from Josh Elkin. Should I get another hobby other than finding Noah Dobson tweets? I'm going to say no because they're really funny.
No.
Absolutely not.
They're very enjoyable. Keep doing what you're doing, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about Montreal Twitter real quick. I may just sign up for Twitter Blue so that they'll pay for my kids' college because they are the most sensitive, miserable, mindless dummies on the internet. Like, they don't understand. I'm an OG. First of all, you can't out hate me. I'm a true hater. I've been on some generational hate runs. People forget I'm the reason the New York Rangers haven't won a cup the last couple of years. Two, I've hated Noah Dobson.
Yeah,
like this is not sour grapes.
Yeah, they think it's because he's gone that you're like all upset. It's like, no, I just literally enjoy hating him.
He's not loved on this pod. went on this pod before he was traded, and I think all three of us basically decided if he goes over X amount of dollars, we all want him gone. We all got on here and said that.
There was not a number that I would have been happy with.
You had a lower number than Jack and I, but
my number was zero.
But it was just like none of us were looking at him as this can't miss right-handed defenseman that you pay a blank, you give a blank check to. It wasn't. None of us thought that way. So it was. There were no Noah Dobson lovers on this podcast.
No, and they're so conceited. Like they think this is like a John Tavares situation where we're like pissed off. I'm thrilled. I am purely trolling. Like you guys were celebrating this. We fleeced you. And now I'm going to be there every step of the way watching your cope turn to pure misery. That's what it is.
And the problem too, and I think all of us have been doing this, like holding them accountable a little bit. Cause I can't stand like the tweet that started it all with me maybe like a week ago with this Dobson stuff or just the Montreal stuff. It was literally a Matthew Schaefer chart. And they're so jealous now because Schaefer, and he's better than Dobson. They bring little Lane Hutson into it from the clouds. What does little Lane Hutson have to do with the Matthew Schaefer chart?
It's head fakes. Head fakes per 60.
And it's Twitter head fakes too, because then you got this kid, oh, I didn't mean to compare them. I wasn't comparing them. It's literally a Matthew Schaefer chart. You mention little Lane. You're comparing them. And we've all said this, like, you want to chirp, we're going to chirp back. So don't give me this, oh, I didn't mean to bring Islander fans in here. They know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. And if you have to explain yourself in the tweets following up your first tweet, you know what you're fucking doing. So cut the bullshit and just take it. And, like, we're going to hold you accountable. If you want to talk shit, we're going to talk shit back. And you're allowed to talk shit to us. Just do it, like, decently well. Like, I actually get upset when the comebacks suck because I'm like, ah. Oh. Like, it's kind of over now. Like, what am I going to say? Like, you got this one kid, like, check the standings. And then 4 days later, the Islanders jump them.
Okay. The Bry Man. Where do we think Holmstrom fits? I haven't loved him with Barzell. I feel like we need him back with Pageau and Lee. Agree. Yeah, I actually said that already on the show. Do you guys feel any different?
No.
Agree. Need him back with the president of player development?
The director of player development.
Director of player development. Yeah, you need him back.
We want him back with him. Part two, I am getting worried about our utilization of Cal Ritchie. Either send him down or let him play 18 to 20 minutes a night or give him two useful line mates. Play him with 10 and 12. Play him 10 through 12 with useful line mates. Thoughts? If he stays, who do you want him playing with?
I think you said it nicely before, Jack. Like, Cizikas is a tough watch right now, and he's been glued to Cizikas, whether he's playing center, Cizikas is playing center. And it's just tough. Like, he gave him a nice pass the other night. I know maybe the puck was rolling, whatever it was, but it was a beautiful pass right in the slot. And Cizikas just blasted into the sky. It's tough right now. You got to give Richie someone who could finish at least a little bit, because that's his game, right? His game is the guy that sets up the goal, probably not as much the guy that scores the goal.
100%.
You need him with someone that could at least have a little bit of scoring touch.
So. Yeah, my answer would just be to replace Cizikas with Siplikov and have Richie center Shabanov and Siplikov for a little bit. I just feel like there's homegrown chemistry between those other two, and having Richie around two skilled players that aren't going to just the puck isn't going to die on their stick every time you're in the offensive zone. So that would be my answer, and I completely agree. I don't like his utilization. And I wouldn't be against sending him back to Bridgeport if it's going to look like this.
Neither would I. I think it might be best, especially there's so many forwards. I think it might be best for him at this point.
I don't love his utilization, but I also haven't been impressed with what I've seen.
Not impressed, but I don't think it's been fair to him.
But listen, it's double-edged sword. I get it. I mean, he started off at playing top 6 minutes and was thrown right into the fire, and he's still getting power play 2 time. You know, we forget that. So he still gets to play minutes with some skilled forwards. It's not a ton, but it is a little bit. But I agree with you. You didn't trade for this guy to be your 4C. So I give him maybe the rest of the road trip, and I pair him with Shabanov. I see if something happens. And if it's not happening, I'm sending him back to Bridgeport to marinate for a year. We forget he's still so young. I just worry about ruining his confidence a little bit. I mean, being held totally off the score sheet for how many games at this point? 7 games, 8 games. It's not good. I haven't loved what I've seen. I would just rather him go play for Rocky, be the one seed down there, develop a ton of confidence, put up numbers, and then we'll try again next year.
Or you even, you know, see where the team's at. But if we do go the route of shipping a couple guys off, then the spots open up for him after 20, 30
games. Sure, yeah. So, all right, next question.
So, Domed, which Canadian market will Islanders fans go to war with next?
Going to stay with Montreal for a while.
War's not over.
Yeah, it's going to.
And then we'll go back to Toronto at some point. A little bit. It's going
to
be
at some point. It has to, right? I just feel like that's the one we're always at war with. I don't really see it happening with any other market because Ottawa's the only other one that's in the East, and Calgary's irrelevant.
Winnipeg. Shout out Ottawa, honestly. Those people love the anti-Habs tweet.
Oh yeah, dude, they've been amazing.
They love it.
Sends fans are good people.
The new alliance.
Yes.
K-Mac, if the Islanders pivot to trading for a big-time forward, we've mentioned Tage Thompson, I suppose Brady Tkachuk, but who are other options if they choose to go that route? The clock may have started quicker with Schaefer's emergence.
So you got to go to guys that either may want out or it's a contract situation. Hypothetically, Brady and Tage would be the want-out versions. Now thinking on the contract side, if Dallas can't extend Robertson, I think that's a guy. Maybe you have the pieces, you go after him. And Ethan and I have kind of said this too, right? Like, if you do make the move, it's got to be a top-notch move. Don't get upset, Jack, but like to me, it's not Kyrou. Like, Kyrou's not the move for this team. To me.
Not anymore. I agree.
Not anymore.
Above Kyrou. Again, it might not be there. And if it's not there, that's okay. You slow play it.
They got Swedish Kyrou now.
Yeah, you gotta save the assets for when one of these guys shake loose. It happens. It might not be this summer, but think back. Like, an Eichel shakes loose. Matthew Tkachuk shakes loose via trade. Guys like that, it comes every couple of years. So if it's not this summer, it's okay. But to me, you hold the pieces to eventually wait for that moment, because if the moment comes and you handle all this the right way, there might not be another team that could pay more to get said player.
Which goes to the argument of stacking assets, but I love the Robertson idea.
That level play, like, I would put those guys all on the same level. Brady, Tage, and Robertson, like, got, you know, you could like whichever one you like more, but that's the level of player you have to go after. No disrespect to Jordan Kyrou, but I think we got to go a notch above Kyrou. Good player, but I just don't think he himself puts us over the top.
Yeah, and if we're going to get someone like that, I would just prefer them be younger at this point than Kyrou.
Yeah, that too, Jack, because as we said, you're kind of building around Schaefer now, not Barzal and Horvat. So we need more. Unless it's an absolute superstar that's a no-brainer, you need a 25, not a 29-year-old.
Yep,
pretty much.
Let's see. Barry T. Bags. Is there any question throughout the course of the season where Cizikas eventually gets scratched? With the logjam at forward, it has become obvious there's better options than Cizikas. No. I know he's a veteran leader in the clubhouse, but he's clearly seen better days. Also, how about that Emil Heinemann guy, Jack? # Jack loves Heine.
Jack does love Heine.
And yeah.
Need I remind everyone who urged patience for 10 games to see if Heinemann would work out in the top six?
Well done, Barry.
Yes.
Well done.
What was the first part of the question?
Could Zizekas finally get scratched?
Casey Zizekas played 25 seconds in the third period against Colorado.
Very telling.
It may be a coming.
And they were only down one goal, too, for that whole period, pretty much. It wasn't like they were down 2-3 and you're desperate. Ethan, you'll know from back in the day, like NHL, like 06, when you used to have the hero lines. It's not like you're putting out the hero lines out there. You're kind of just trying to find a way to score a goal.
Yeah.
And we know from back in the day, prime Cizikas, he's out there in those situations. He might put one in a clutch situation, but does he have one this year? What does he have, one goal?
He has one goal this season.
Yeah, so.
Casey Cizikas has one goal, two assists, and is -8. In 19 games.
Yeah, the fact that Waz starting to do that, I think it's getting closer and closer, and I think Casey probably knows it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not pretty for him right now, and I do think it is possible. On to Sam. what is each of your ideal scenarios for the deadline slash remainder of season into the off season?
Well, I think we've all got differing viewpoints here. Maybe Jack and I are a bit more similar than those people are probably happy to hear, but Rocco, you go first since I already know where you're going.
Yeah. I mean, I'm of the opinion the value would be sky high. You have to take into account the free agents that will be available this summer are like already becoming slim to none. Like the best guys out there are going to be Nick Schmaltz and Alex Tuch, which are good players in their own right, but they're far from superstars. So you're going to get a lot of teams at the deadline trying to cash in, trying to acquire guys and extend guys to make sure they're in their lineup, not just this year for a playoff run, but potentially further. So for me, I've said this, I've never wavered on it. I'm moving JGP no matter what. We could be in first place, I would still move JGP, because whether he's the guy or not, at some point we have to figure out if Cal Ritchie is the guy. And to me, it's not about this year. Like, I think we'd all agree, the three of us, we're not winning a Stanley Cup this year. We all agree on that?
Agreed.
So to me, asset management, you have to trade JGP. The value will be sky high. I think you'll get a first plus. I think it has potential to be not as much, but nearly as much as a Nelson deal. So to me, JGP is an automatic. Deal him. Lee, I mean, is Lee's value sky high right now?
It's not, but listen, this is where you and I have flipped.
But I see.
Or where I've flipped, at least.
You flipped. I would be okay trading both of them, but I can see a world where maybe Lee, because the value's not crazy, you keep him, he stays on a sweetheart deal, he's your captain, yada, yada, so on and so forth. But the bottom line is the direction as a whole, just play it smart. Under no circumstances, you can't buy any rentals. You can't. You're not ready for that. If you're buying, you want to buy a right-handed D that
long-term, young.
Long-term, that you're in the Discord, you know who's available, you know who's out there. If you're in insiders, you got it. You know who we're talking about. But it's just, you got to play it carefully because you don't want it to blow up in your face. So for me, I trade JGP because I'm not looking to re-sign him, right? Like, if you're not looking to re-sign him, to me, you have to deal him. If you want to try to get him back on a sweetheart deal, I could see your side and maybe, okay, hold on to him, whatever. But the market's going to be so crazy. I don't think you're getting him on a sweetheart deal anyway, because he's going to get overpaid. Because look at who else is available. There's not much out there. And there's teams.
I think you're right. Listen, I see both sides of it. But I think you could say the same thing about Anders Lee. Like, let's say he goes on a streak and he finishes the year with like 25 goals and he gets traded to a playoff contender and he performs really well. You could argue that he's probably going to be one of the top guys available because the market is so weak. After Panarin, it's probably like in terms of wingers. It'll probably be Lee. And where I kind of go with this is mostly the fact that I've been underwhelmed by Cal Ritchie. And like, no one's expecting Cal Ritchie to sort of step in immediately at the age of 20 or however old he is and be like this unbelievable lockdown 3C. Like, this is something that's going to take time. And if you and I both agree that the timeline for this team has been expedited because of how good Matthew Schaefer is, respectfully, I don't think they can afford to wait for Cal Ritchie's development at the center position. There are some other guys who, like, if you were to bring up a Cole Yzerman next year, like, he's a guy whose game, like, at least like that scoring dimension is there. Like, you can kind of bank, like, all right, like, if he's playing, you know, power play 2 minutes and he's playing on the third line, like, he'll probably his rookie year net 15, maybe, you know, if he's pushing it 17 or something like that, if he's given sufficient ice time. Like, I just think that if your goal is to be competitive next year, then JGP has to be a part of that, because there's no other center in the system that can come in and give you even remotely close to that production. And I think that if he were to say, yeah, I will extend at like a very team friendly price because I like it here, I want to stay, whatever it is, you know, like, what if you were to get a Palmieri type deal? Like, and I understand that that's going to be an underpayment, but like, if you are able to rid yourself of the Lee cap hit, you're not going to have to pay him $7 million next year. And you're somehow able to get rid of Cizikas, which is another two and change, and you're still able to free up close to $10 million, $4 million to $5 million of which you can commit to Pageau for like 2 years. And, you know, at worst, he's like an excellent 4C, and Richie comes in and he wows you as a 3C. Like, I just think that it's very valuable to have. And I think if you, again, like, this is a very conditional statement. Like, it's conditioned on, will JGP extend for a super friendly price? Are you committed to trading Anders Lee? And are you committed to getting rid of Casey Cizikas a year early? I think if all those three things come true, then it makes sense for this team to extend Pageau, but only if all those three things are true. Otherwise, Rocco, I agree with you. If he's like, I want $6.5-7 million, I want, you know, 5 years of term or whatever, like something ridiculous, I'm trading him for a first and a prospect, and I'm not thinking twice about it.
But you got to keep in mind too. Sorry,
I agree with no. I agree with Ethan.
Yeah, but you got to keep in mind too, guys, that we just talked about the key is going to be adding a prime asset. You need to stack assets to add said prime asset, right? So
I get
JGP, it. If you trade JGP for a first and a prospect, something
I don't think you're getting that first
and an extra prospect to go and get Tage Thompson, Brady Tkachuk, name any guy you want that might shake loose. I don't think Brady is, but the other two, who knows? So you can go get that guy, but it's the age factor too for me. Like, I don't want
to. I agree. I'm Mr. Regression. I am. And I'm not talking like a long term here. Like a 2 year, like a 2 year extension, fine.
But he's going to, but
I get it. Someone's going to give him a 5x5. Someone's
going to give him something crazy.
A 5x6. I get it.
Like, if you're a team like Anaheim that's ascending right now and you have this young core, why the fuck not? Like, why wouldn't you give Pageau, like, lower his AAV a little bit, just give him 5 years?
I get it.
If he's done by year 4 and 5, you got years 1 through 3 where he helped your team get.
Listen, I'm not breaking the bank.
I think it's going to get to the point where it's going to be a tough spot.
But they're going to have those talks with him. Those talks will happen. He'll
probably want to stay, but I think the money's going to be too big for him to stay. At least I'm kind of hoping it is, because I don't want to resign him to those.
Okay. Again, like, if Danny Nelson was ready to come up and be a stud, or right, Cal Ritchie was showing promising signs, yeah, I changed my tune a little bit. And again, there's plenty of time until the deadline. Like, let's just say Cal Ritchie starts putting it together. Great. See ya, Pageau. I don't care. Yeah, I just think if your goal is to be competitive next year and make a big splash and make some big additions and, like, reshape this defense, like, that's a big hole to leave this lineup. Not just for, like, the third line, but also the penalty kill.
I think Ethan's absolutely right, because Jonathan Drouin, Kyle Palmieri, those are two placeholders. I think JG Pageau became a placeholder when they got Richie, and they gave Richie the second line center role to see, can we get rid of the placeholder yet? And I don't think they've gotten the answer that they could just get rid of it. So I just wouldn't be surprised to see another 2 year, $4.5 million extension for a guy like Pageau. As for Lee, I mean, he needs to be traded. You have Shabanov on the 100%. Fourth line. You have Duclair with the same amount of goals. Love Anders, but re-signing him kind of makes no sense.
Yeah, but
like, you have those placeholders, like you mentioned, Jack, with Drouin and Palmieri. And, like, in 2 years, if Cole Eiserman's not here and producing, there's a problem.
Yeah.
Well, but you have to, unfortunately, because of these guys' age, you have to figure that out, because, like, they're not going to be – we're building around Matthew Schaefer, who's 18, who's going to be here for the next crazy amount of years.
Sure.
So, yeah, of course you want to win and Pageau, but we always talk about too, right? A team in the Islanders, you know, grouping or whatever you want to call it.
They're position.
Position. They're not the biggest market team. And it's much easier to find a 3C, a 4C, whatever, than the top line winger, the top line center. And my goal is more the big picture with, like, okay, like, let's get these assets and either maybe we hit on one of these prospects and they're great, or we use said asset to go get that star. Because to me, you can find a 3C at deadlines or a free agency or whatever. It's so hard to get that top end talent. And I think we really need to shoot for that top end talent sooner rather than later when it comes to Matthew Schaefer, because my biggest fear, if we're going deeper into the future, is having Schaefer and not having his running mate. Pageau will never be his running mate. Anders Lee will never be his running mate. Our goal should be to find his true running mate that's much closer to his age.
Let me just one other counter to the, like, if you were going to go, like, let's just, for shits and giggles, let's just say Jason Robertson, right? Okay. Like, yes, having those extra firsts is nice, but we forget they're not all going to be this year. Like if they trade Lee for and they get like a late first for, from some team, and they have three firsts, like in a Jason Robertson trade, they're not going to give up all three firsts in 26. Like
no, but what it would be
like, it would, like two firsts in 26, a first in 27, or like it was something like that.
Players too, right? So like that's where the Islanders are in a good spot because they're going to want that player that's a little bit cheaper.
They're going to get Cole Yzerman.
Yeah, they're going to want a guy that's close. Honestly, a Richie type guy or someone like – not Richie exactly, but it could be Eklund. It could be Yzerman. It could be Aitchison. They have all these prospects to use now that it's not just about the picks. It's just about stacking assets.
I get it.
When the opportunity arrives, yeah. You're ready. Like, you're ready because you don't know when it's going to come, and we know for this team, yes, Schaefer's attractive, and maybe eventually guys will want to play with Schaefer, but we can never bank on free agency. It's going to have to come via trade.
100% agree. All right.
Two more questions. Ha, got him. What kind of calculator is suggested? Is the suggested calculator
Casio? Casio.
But we need to know what we're calculating first, and that is to see how trash Montreal is for dumping the ass man after he was hit by a car, and the numbers showing how much
38.8. I showed it earlier. It's 38.8 goals. That's the calculation.
There it is. And then the last question of the night belongs to Mike. As the local Russian, I can't help but feel Siplikov has gotten the short end of the stick. In over 60 minutes with Barzal, Simon's been on the ice for one goal and two against. The only goal being an own goal that was actually credited to Jonathan Drouin. Why do you think the coach dislikes Siplikov so much? He did really well in a second line role last year.
Slow man.
Yeah, because he's slow as shit, and that second line last year was defensively atrocious.
I will say, I get so excited when the team wins that I don't care, but I understand where Mike is coming from because when you watch and see how certain players are held accountable versus others, and it happens to be one that like you're pushing for and you want to see succeed, it's really frustrating when you see some of these other guys get away with just being passengers. I'm not calling Holmstrom a passenger, but I'm talking about a guy like Duclair. This guy literally just skates. Like I was watching him closely the last few nights. Like, dude, he made a nice play yesterday, but it's the first nice play he's made in weeks. He doesn't do anything. And it's like, why does he, just because he could skate, he gets to be out there? Like, and it's even more frustrating when you break it down and notice that I have a wager on Siplikov. He's also the 24-year-old in the situation, and Duclair's the 29-year-old. We really do pick and choose around here sometimes with Wah, and I agree. Like, he was never going to succeed on the fourth line, and you can give me this spiel of you've got to earn your minutes here and there. It's just a bunch of bullshit when you see guys like Duclair or Holmstrom have a few off nights. I don't get it either, Mike, and I'm fully with you.
Well, Holmstrom can kill penalties, so there's your answer for that. And I think that's pretty much strictly based on the fact that he can play special teams. But Siplikov is slow as shit. Defensively, I don't particularly believe he's been great.
Yeah,
and, you know, it just sucks, Jack, that two of your guys, Pierre Engvall and Maxim Siplikov, head coach is not too fond of.
Well, it's not springtime yet for Pierre. Even though he probably won't be
spring
joining.
Spring is not sprunging.
Yeah.
Spring will not be sprung.
Groundhog is going to keep seeing the shadow or whatever.
But like, he's put into these situations as like where he has to play sound defensively because he's on the ice with players that cannot keep.
But everyone should have to play sound defensively, no?
Yes, but he has to more with a guy like Cizikas because they can't maintain possession offensively. Like, you're not going to be successful as an offensive line with Evan Neal. That's Casey Cizikas in 2026. I've said it before. Woof. I'll say it again. It's that bad, folks. It's that bad.
I could see a situation where Siplikov's kind of like the guy in waiting when they eventually do maybe make a deal. Like if Lee gets dealt, maybe Siplikov just gets that role. Like, hey, rest of the season, try to prove yourself.
I think there's the smallest chance tomorrow morning you see the lines and Cizikas is scratched. Just the smallest chance.
And then Richie centers him.
And I'm telling you, that line might cook, but it's scary because like they only have one game to cook and they don't have a mistake to afford. But like other guys can make mistakes and they'll be in the lineup. Like, well, it's such a small sample size.
You get that check, but at the same time, like when you say other lines, like, I'm sorry, but the Horvat line's been so good. If they make a mistake, like,
I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about, I'm honestly picking on Duclair.
Yeah, I know. Duclair. But again, Duclair's the speed aspect, and Holmstrom's the more well-rounded aspect where he could kill penalties and play other roles.
Holmstrom should not be scratched.
I'm just saying that's the reasoning.
You know, I didn't mean to say Holmstrom should be scratched at all. I do think that he needs to play third line minutes, though, maximum.
He could be held accountable a little more. He hasn't been great. You're right. He could be better.
We're done with questions, but we haven't touched on Alex Romanov.
Woof.
All right, let's end with Romanov and then one positive to finish it off.
Okay. Alex Romanov, since both of these are from Datadom. So this was 5 days ago. Things really haven't looked much better. Since signing his 8-year, $50 million contract on June 30th, Alexander Romanov has rewarded the Islanders' faith in him by being the single worst player in the NHL by game score value. So there's that. And then the second tweet, also from our friend Datadom, Tony DeAngelo in his 5 games since being divorced from Alex Romanov, 3 assists, 2 primary, plus minus of +4, Corsi share 56.7%, Fenwick share 58.2%, expected goal share 60.7%, high danger chance share 59.9% chance, and of course, 1 game misconduct ejection.
Pause. 1 second. So 2 shows ago, even in the beginning of the season, we were talking about this Romanov-DeAngelo pairing, and I sat up here bravely, and I was like, you know, guys, like, everyone loves to hate DeAngelo. He's the easiest guy to target, but I truly thought that Romanov was the problem on that pairing, and it looks like I was correct. And once in a while, that just felt good because, like, it was a crazy thing to kind of say, the 1 million guy that everybody hates versus Romanov, but Tony's dancing on him. He was the reason they won the game on Friday. He set up the game-tying goal. He had an assist on the first one. He took a penalty by cursing out the ref. That fires up the bench. Like, Tony's doing his thing again, and it is just
a pleasure. Tweeting about politics.
Yeah, he's in his.
He's unleashed right now. He's unleashed.
I'm behind him, man. Good for 100%. 77.
I'm happy for him. He's finally unleashed again. But again, like, it just goes to show, you know, he was the target of a lot of fan criticism, and then you see him finally away from Alex Romanov, and it's like, oh, this is the Tony we saw last year.
Yeah, awesome. Romanov's the biggest disappointment so far this season.
Easily.
There's a close second.
No, there's not.
I was at the game in Utah on Friday, and I went up every time the puck was in our zone. I was like, hey, dude, it was a Vancouver Canucks fan. I was like, look, 28. Again, he's like, oh, I love this when, like, a fan base has one player that they just can't control it on. And he was like, how much you pay that guy? And I was like, oh, you know, he's just on the team for the next 8 years or whatever.
Yeah. Well, hopefully not. Hopefully just one.
Oh my goodness, it's so bad. He doesn't do anything. He doesn't do anything well except hit people. Which, listen, it does have a positive effect when players are coming into the zone, dipsy daisy. But it's just, my goodness, man, it's so bad.
A guy like that for big hits for 8 years, like, he's gotta find.
He's always hurt too.
Andrew McDonald was better than how he's been playing this season. He has been that bad.
I'm trying to be patient because it's an 8-year deal and we got a long way to go.
No. I'm
out of patience.
I'm trying to be impatient. I want him traded.
I said, but it's just like,
I want him traded before this deal's locked.
I can't
in the no trade clause.
I can't unsee what I've seen in the first month of the season. It has been so bad that he does not get the benefit of the doubt to me. And, like, if he plays a good game, I don't care. I need to see it 10 times before I start believing in the guy again. It's actually been that bad. He is a complete liability.
Not that he was even good last night, but it was, like, probably one of his better games. And then you look after the game, and it was not great. But hopefully a step in the right direction. We'll see.
Yeah. All right. Wrap it up. Thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter. Subscribe to the podcast. Check out the store. Check out our Patreon if you want access to the Discord, Best Islanders chat out there. And we will talk to you guys next week.
Father wears his Sunday best. Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a night to keep. He can't hang around. Io's house. In the middle of our street. Io's house.